America's ready to get back to work, but to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the agility to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 actions businesses need to take now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/Golic. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Golic. That's netsuite.com/Golic.
This is the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Good Monday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. As always, we are presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. I hope your weekend was good, and I hope you had some time. If you are of the fatherly persuasion, you had the time with your children, or if your father's still around, I hope you had a chance to talk to him and tell him how much you love him, because it feels like we don't say that enough in this day and age, when it just seems like every day something else just comes across and makes you go, really? And we certainly had that again over the weekend at Talladega.
Listen, this was a bad weekend. This is a bad weekend for a lot of sports. You know, the PGA had a positive test, though the tournament went on.
Yeah.
Baseball closed down all their facilities. Basketball, there's a spike going on in the state where they're going to play, though maybe not close enough. We'll get into that. College football has a ton of positive tests going on. In the NFL, the doctor for the union is saying players stay the hell away from each other until training camp. And all that, in all honesty, kind of pales in comparison to what else has been going on in the world at the NASCAR race in Talladega, where a noose was found in the locker of Bubba Wallace in Bubba Wallace's garage. I mean, this was a bad symbolic weekend, both physically and mostly physically, obviously with the COVID and all the positive tests, but. Boy, oh boy. I mean, a noose left in the locker of Bubba Wallace.
Yeah, it doesn't even seem real, which is the crazy part. Like, all the rest of that stuff, it is tolerable in the way that it had been so normal up until this point. We had been used to seeing various news about the leagues, their plans to return, spikes in cases, which are unfortunate because those are tied to very real lives in all of this, but that's something that we've been dealing with so much. And even this, I mean, if you watched any of the ESPYs last night, it was a show that was heavily steeped in all of the social issues that have plagued our society, in all of the movements that athletes have been such a part of, in lifting up their voices in support of these causes. And so all of that was still present in a way that had been for a while now. But this just stops you in your tracks. Like, there's something, and maybe it's wrong because it should all make you angry, but my immediate reaction to this, in a way that, like, I usually try and make not the case, was like real true anger.
I was stunned, because remember what didn't shock me is outside of Talladega. And by the way, the race wasn't run.
Right. Race going to be run today at 3 o'clock.
There were flags outside the stadium.
Confederate flag.
Confederate flag. I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah. Outside the stadium, there was a flyover of a Confederate flag. All that I expected.
Totally.
I absolutely expected people on the outside of the track to do that. But man, hearing a noose in a locker set, someone got in there, which they're going to find of just how crazy that was.
Junior, to your point, it's just such a visceral image of hate. You know what I mean? There's no other way to describe it. It is a visceral image of hatred and pure evil. And there's no way to mix the message. You know, like, for example, the flag. Oh, it's heritage, not hate.
Right.
You can cling to that rope if you want.
And people will.
That's a joke.
And they will.
But there's no getting around this one.
Yeah.
There's no way of parsing it that someone decided to do something so despicable and stupid because they wanted to. Because they wanted to make someone else feel small. Because they wanted to make someone else feel less than human. And, you know, Ryan
Ryan McGee
and Marty Smith have done such a great job with this. But Marty had this incredibly long, passionate soundbite he used on radio and also on television yesterday, where he said, "I hope whoever did this, I hope you feel ashamed." And the sad part is that person won't feel ashamed.
No. I thought the exact same thing when I heard him say it. Yeah. I said, "Marty, they're not.
This person will never feel ashamed for what this person did." No. And that's the saddest part of this entire thing.
So NASCAR put out a statement late last night, and they responded to this pretty swiftly and said, from them, "Late this afternoon, NASCAR was made aware that a noose was found in the garage stall of the 43 team. We are angry and outraged and cannot state strongly enough how seriously we take this heinous act. We've launched an immediate investigation and will do everything we can to identify the person or persons responsible and eliminate them from the sport. As we have stated unequivocally, there's no place for racism in NASCAR, and this act only strengthens our resolve to make the sport open and welcoming to all." Yeah.
So, I mean, first off, the idiot will get caught because he's an idiot and there are cameras everywhere.
Correct.
So they're going to get caught. And then where it goes from there, if he's someone in that.
And it's, I would say, it's also worth noting, so this was the first race that NASCAR was allowing fans back to, but the access was very limited on all of this, on all fronts. Ryan Smith, who is part of Marty and McGee, as you mentioned, that you can hear on ESPN radio every weekend, talked about how NASCAR is smoking this guy out.
That was a very, very isolated incident. You know, because of the pandemic, there's an extremely limited number of people allowed in that garage. It's just essential personnel. It's people that work on race teams. It's track security and track employees, and that's really kind of it. There's no fans. There's no hot passes. None of that stuff is go tours in the garage like they normally are. And so NASCAR is smoking this guy out, this man or whoever it is, and that's what's happening here because they could have sat on this thing. There were only a couple of people that knew about it. Bubba Wallace didn't know about it until he was told about it. And so what's happening is that they're sending a message, and they're starting the process of whoever it was, they're letting them know they can't hide, and they're closing the ranks on this person.
Listen, if there's one positive out of this, it happened in this situation. So this guy's going to get found out.
Oh, very easily.
This person is going to get found out one way or the other because of what Ryan McGee was just talking about. There are so many cameras out there, and NASCAR, they're taking this thing, the whole thing with the Confederate flag, they're taking it very seriously, and they're taking this thing very seriously. It wouldn't surprise me by the end of the day they didn't know who this guy was.
Oh, I'd be shocked if it was the other way on all of this. As far as Bubba Wallace, he also put out a statement last night with his response. "Today's despicable act of racism and hatred leaves me incredibly saddened and serves as a painful reminder of how much further we have to go as a society and how persistent we must be in our fight against racism. Over the last several weeks, I've been overwhelmed by the support from people across the NASCAR industry, including other drivers and team members in the garage. Together, our sport has made commitment to driving real change and champion a community that is accepting and welcoming of everyone. Nothing is more important, and we will not be deterred by that reprehensible actions of those who seek to spread hate. As my mother told me today, quote, they are just trying to scare you. This will not break me. I will not give in, nor will I back down. I will continue to proudly stand for what I believe in." So Bubba Wallace coming out and unequivocally saying that this will not stop and this will not deter him. And the first group of people I thought he mentioned was the support from other drivers.
Right.
I tell you what, if I'm a driver in this sport and I don't know the dynamic as well as, you know, team sports where it's so very clearly a teammate, but we hear all that time that term, the fraternity.
Yeah.
Someone in your fraternity was attacked.
Yes.
Like that's what this was.
Rally around.
Like one of your, and that was all I could keep coming back to. And I was angry, man.
Yeah.
Like it just, cause that thought, like one of your teammates was attacked. And the only thing I could think of, and I always try and be so measured in response because especially when you play football and you're big, everyone assumes your response is always going to be brutish and it's always going to be violence and it's always going to be the most like basis, carnal thing that you can muster. And so I always try and be pretty measured and think about it and respond reasonably. And the only thing I could come back to with this is someone needs their ass kicked.
Yeah.
Like that was straight up what it was. Like the thought of someone doing that to a teammate, to the person, like a person I love in the sport like that is such a guttural response that I couldn't tolerate. And so if you're a driver out there who wasn't sure about this before, and as all the flag debate came up around the Confederate flag, if it wasn't crystal for you before, if racism was still something that kind of existed in the abstract and you hadn't yet fully digested it or hadn't been reckoned with that, let this crystallize the damn thing. I encourage you to make it very real and very personal right now, because it doesn't get much more personal than this. And that's not to say the police brutality and all those other things. They're different symptoms of the same sickness.
Yes.
But this is such a visceral image. This is what, you know what? This is kind of like the Confederate flag. It's the easy racism to spot.
Right.
So let it be the gateway to the understanding the rest of it for you. Let this make what Bubba's been telling you about in all those other instances and what all these other athletes have been telling you about feel very freaking real.
Like I said, there's no way to parse it. There's no way to think of anything else but what it is and what it stands for. And Bubba has said he's felt like all the other drivers have had his back on more than one occasion. It would certainly be great if we heard a lot from a lot of those drivers speaking up. So it's not just Bubba speaking up, but everybody else speaking up with him.
I think they'd be so stunned if they find out it's someone from another team. I think the thought is it's going to be someone. Whenever you do these events in pro sports and you go to the different cities, they have the local people working at the tracks or at the stadiums or at the arenas. And I have a feeling they believe it's going to be someone like that, because if it's someone on a team, I mean, they're obviously going to be gone. But then you're talking about invasion of a locker room type thing, which would, to your point, Mike, would make me lose my friggin' mind.
It would be exponentially worse.
It really would. And then it gets down, and we'll get into the law part of it. Is it hate crime in Alabama? You know, different states have different things of where it would go for this person.
I have to believe that this person will be found out sooner rather than later.
Agreed.
Because of the situation in which it was happening.
Golic
and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr. Golic and Wingo with you on a Monday morning. ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So, for all the sports hoping to return, finding a way to return, or beginning to get set to try and play in the middle of the pandemic, it was kind of a rough weekend. Because, as you said, Nick Watney tested positive on the PGA Tour, although I thought the tour did a really good job handling that situation. We've seen a bunch of colleges have several students testing positive in a bunch of places as those athletes are working out. We have all those issues. And then we have the NBA getting closer and closer to the resumption of play in the bubble/campus/resort area atmosphere in Florida. In Disney World. And all of this is time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, because Florida, as a state, added 4,049 new cases Saturday, which broke the previous single day record of 3,822, which was set Friday for new cases in the coronavirus. In all, the state has set records for single day cases in 7 of the past 10 days and is approaching almost 94,000 infections, becoming a national hotspot along with Texas and Arizona, states that are seeing surging numbers and states that were the first to sort of reopen. As you might imagine, this is catching the eye of a lot of people in the NBA who are getting set to descend on Florida in Orlando. Now, we should point out that in Central Florida, where they will be in Orlando, the cases are not nearly as high in Orange County or in Osceola County as they are in Dade County, which is in Southern Florida.
Yeah, it's a lot. So the bulk of the cases, almost 25,000 cases, are in Miami-Dade County. South Florida continues to get hit really hard in all of this, but it is important to differentiate, especially in a state as big as Florida, and the way this is going to proceed, that area that we're talking about for the NBA is not the one that's necessarily the hotbed right now.
And you look at Orange County and Osceola County as compared to the 25,000. Orange County, 4,500 cases. Osceola County has reported 1,000 cases, so a lot less. Michelle Roberts, who runs the players union, her quote, "Can't say I'm surprised given the state's approach to reopening. We know there's a few hotbeds out there, Florida, Arizona, Texas, where you're seeing a resurgence." And here's the thing, because I know in those states there are people saying, well, wait a minute, it's only in certain areas and you have to look more at hospitalizations or deaths. And I get all that from the larger point, but not for sports.
Yeah.
A positive test is all that's needed in sports to possibly stop sports. So from the country view and the reopening, I understand what you're saying about hospitalizations and deaths, but all you need is a positive test by an athlete. It could be asymptomatic. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That athlete is gone in any sport for 10 days to 2 weeks. So that's what we're talking about here. And if you get multiple players on a team, that's what we're talking about. Is it going to shut back down? Because as they've talked about in going to Walt Disney World, while the players will be tested, all the workers who will not be living on site, from the, you know, the restaurants and the hotels and all the people that will be there working.
All the unionized workers, yes, which is
they are not going to be tested. They're going to be living at their homes and then driving onto property. They're not going to be tested like the NBA is going to test their players. So there is that concern there.
Yeah. By the way, the NBA Players Association held a virtual town hall with players this week and addressed the concerns about the Florida cases. And one of the things that was brought up is like, look, we're in this restrictive bubble and this is what we are, but the people that are interacting with us aren't. And that's going to be the bigger issue.
Now, and I know in the safety protocol that got sent out to the teams, there are a lot of precautions taken to limiting any of that involvement. You know, their hotel rooms would only be cleaned once a week and it would be a person wearing full protective equipment in those situations. Yeah. For the people they might interact with more often, think the bus drivers. The NBA is talking about potentially hiring out its own bus drivers for a lot of these situations so that whoever would be interacting with the team would be quarantined in the bubble with them, or at the very least would be subject to the same testing, because that's something that the unionized employees won't be subject to, is the same testing that NBA players are.
And here's the thing. We're seeing it in college on a grander scale because more people are coming in of athletes testing positive. You have 37 people. I believe it's 37 per team.
Yeah, the traveling group is 37.
A little over 1,100 people will descend upon Orlando in a matter of a couple days, I think, in the first week of July. You know, out of some of that, there's going to test positive, right? Whether it's players, support staff, coaches, somebody, yeah, and they're immediately going to be isolated and then doing the contact tracing of, okay, who are they around? Because they're going to be coming in on private planes. I know that. So right out of the gate, it will be interesting on who tests positive from player to coach to support staff, and right out of the gate will be isolated from everybody else.
You have to assume there's going to be positive.
You do, don't you?
In any situation, that's why
it's happening in college, which is something we'll get to a little later, because it's the first test they're taking after coming in from all around the country,
right,
which is the same thing here we're talking about with the NBA players.
So this is a massive undertaking that the NBA has sort of put under themselves to get this thing back and going in this bubble environment in Disney World with all the hotels, with all the teams playing. And Brian Windhorst, again, one of the coolest names ever for a podcast, the Hoop Collective. I just love it. Basically said, there's been so much put into this that you're going to hear that magic phrase, this is too big to fail.
The reason this is going forward is because the league shifted from the idea that they couldn't play with players with any coronavirus to we can't continue to play if we have players who are positive. And here's how I'm going to term it. It's too big to fail. It's too much money, and it's too big to fail. Now, I say that sitting here on the night of June 21st. We may get to July 15th, and we may have guys testing positive or five guys on a team testing positive or what have you, and there is a tipping point. We don't know. I'm not saying that's not going to happen, Nick, but my feel from talking to people in the league is that is not the way that they think it's going to go.
Well, of course they don't think it's going to go that way. I mean, listen, you prepare for contingency plans. I get it. You're putting a plan in play to work, not to fail. So you want it to work, but he used the phrase in there that I'll use more importantly than too big to fail. What's the tipping point?
Yeah.
Because we know there are going to be positive tests. So what's the tipping point? When will it be, okay, we're going to try everything we can to make sure we do this thing, but at some point, you're going to have to say, this is too much. I don't know what that number is, and anytime we try and ask anybody, I know it's very difficult to give an exact number. If X amount of our 37 test positive, we're going to have to shut that team down. I know it's tough to do. But to me, that line is more important than too big to fail. It's what's the tipping point.
And you wonder if that will be regulated because this is a professional league, because we've seen at various colleges, we've seen different numbers of testing triggering different responses at schools. Certain schools have shut down their programs for the summer for the time being in order to try and preserve that going forward, while others with comparable amounts of positive tests have gone forward and gone by the protocol that they had set forward for the NBA, because that's going to start tomorrow. So the NBA, per their agreement so far, is scheduled to start testing players the first round tomorrow on June 23rd. And so that's the thing that you were talking about, is we're going to see a bunch of positive tests out of this first one. That's the expected part. And like everyone's talked about, that means what they're doing is working. They're catching this at the beginning. They're identifying people going into this so that when people start to get to Orlando and get to Disney, they're able to properly assess the situation. There have been a number of epidemiologists who have come, you know, talked on ESPN and referenced in other places that right now, the way the NBA's got this set up, they're doing the most they possibly can. that doesn't mean you can do everything.
Yeah.
That's the place we got to get to, because what's the tipping point is going to be the question for the players who are already some battling the idea of not going here for fear of safety reasons.
And by Wednesday, they have to make that decision, June 24th. Yes.
They have to make that decision, the players, to declare whether or not they're going to come. And so you've got some wrestling with the social justice portion of this, with their safety as it pertains to their potential free agency and the future of their career, with the safety surrounding the coronavirus and being separated with their families. So you've had guys balancing all of this, but I think I keep coming back to Brian Windhorst, is between the meat of the bell curve and NBA players wanting and needing to be out there for financial reasons, for their future reasons, and for a larger understanding of what could happen to the sport should this season not happen, and the financial ramifications of the owners potentially being able to blow up this CBA, what could happen to the future of the sport, and a lot of that. There is a lot at stake, and I think it's just a matter of everyone kind of calmly communicating in this situation. Here's what we can expect as we start to come back. So when these rash of positive tests start popping up after we start testing tomorrow, people aren't caught off guard by this, which I hopefully at this point everyone's been made aware of to where they shouldn't be.
Look, there's a couple of things that need to be sort of understood here, because any sport that involves contacting another human being, for example, like NASCAR, you can be in your car and you really aren't contacting. Golf, you can play and really be away from everybody except when you're standing close to someone on the tee box. In any sport where there's physical contact, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, whether it's soccer, there's no way to guarantee their safety against getting the virus 100%. You are then going to sort of weigh it, okay, what are we willing to risk as an organization and as players in said sports against the cost of not playing? And that's the... For every sport where you are not isolated by yourself and not touching another person, that's going to be the thought process going forward for every one of these things. We cannot safely guarantee that you won't get it 100%. That's something we can't give. So what are we willing to risk either as an organization or as an individual to play the sport against the risk of not playing them economically, because it will be catastrophic?
And like, players are allowed to think about that. Like, I understand that health and safety should come first in all of this. If you feel you have a moral obligation to a cause that's bigger than you or any one league, that's all understandable. But I also won't fault players who, the players that are not the high profile stars that have already made life altering money, I can't falter them for saying, well, I'm also very dependent on the potential income of not only this season, but the prospect of next season, my competitive desires. It's one of the prongs in this that deserves a place at the table for guys that are in a different position than others.
I completely agree. It's about thinking forward to the CBA possibly being ripped up, to free agency being what, 2 days, the draft is October 16th, free agency starting October 18th.
Yep.
And I don't think there's any doubt the union, the head of the union, wants this to happen so that CBA doesn't get ripped up and they're starting from scratch again. So I do believe it's all going to go forward. But again, I'll say, you know, what is the tipping point? So I think they're, again, players have till June 24th to decide if they're going to report first week in July. They fly down there. We're trying to get baseball to even agree to a deal at this point.
Good luck.
Are we getting any closer there as the players were supposed to have a vote in baseball last night to decide if they were going to take the 60 games that the, that, because again, the league proposed 60 games. The union came back with 70. The league didn't even respond to that. They said there will be no counter proposal. It will be 60 games. And they tried to throw in now a couple of more things for the players. Hey, we won't expand the playoffs in 2021. You don't have to have universal DH in 2021. Trying to throw out some olive branches, as you put it before the show, Mike, to try and make it more palatable. And now the players were supposed to vote last night. Now they're delaying their vote to see before they finally come together and to see if decide if they're going to take these 60 games or not.
Yeah, and there are some that think that they're just waiting for Rob Manfred to sort of unilaterally impose what he's going to when it comes to the amount of games in here to try and preserve. I think I heard our own Pedro Gomez bring up the idea of doing that to preserve the right to file a grievance, which could be a grievance for, I believe, up to $1 billion in all this.
Yeah.
And we said this right away, the reaction from Major League Baseball's side to the idea of a grievance being a part of what happens going forward was really hesitant, because it seems like they knew the players had a case.
Yeah.
Like, Like, you wouldn't be bringing that up if that document you had in March we've heard so much about wasn't so vague and you didn't think the players might have had a case at coming and grabbing a bunch of that money.
And all of this is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. So that's the money part of it they still haven't worked out.
Right.
And then, oh, by the way, baseball got slapped in the face, too, with the pandemic over the weekend, as all Major League Baseball training camps have temporarily closed after multiple teams reported positive tests Friday, a source confirmed to ESPN. According to USA Today, there were a total of 40 positive tests among players and staff. So, again, understand where baseball finds itself. They are basically the last sport to try and figure this thing out because of the money. They haven't even gotten to the other part of it, which is the reason everything was shut down to begin with, which would be the pandemic.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So all the facilities are closed right now, and it's a little different than the NBA because the NBA is all going to one place with over 1,000 people being tested a lot. Now it's up to each individual team at their facility to do their testing amongst themselves. Oh, by the way, before they fly, you know, to other cities and play games. So, but they got to get this deal done first. And it's what seemed odd to me is I didn't realize when Rob Manfred and Tony Clark met and Rob Manfred said 60 games, nothing came out of that. That sounded like, remember Rob Manfred said it sounded like
the framework, the beginning of a framework of a possibility.
It sounds like he meant, dudes, it's 60, take it or leave it.
Yeah.
Because the union actually comes back to negotiate and they drop from 89 games all the way to 70 games saying, okay, we're going to give up hundreds of millions of dollars a year, come down to 70 games. Both sides can't file a grievance. And Rob Manfred was like, No. I guess you didn't understand me. 60 is as high as we're going. It's like, wait a minute. I thought there was a negotiation. I thought maybe it got to go to 65. But now baseball, the league is saying, no. It was 60. That's all we're playing. So
when and where is 60?
Yeah. Right?
Well, that's when and where.
And oh, by the way, please don't file a grievance against us. And if I'm the union, I'm going to hell with that.
Yeah.
Well, it was still the commissioner negotiating instead of coming in and saying, because remember, we always talk about 48. That's as low as they can go on the games that the commissioner and the league can impose on the players. They can go higher. So he could have very well come into that situation and said, all right, you will play 60 games, show up here and there, bada bing, bada boom. But he started the negotiations again. This is all continued in that tenor, so here we are.
Listen, so there are two things they still got to deal with, right? They got to get a deal, and then they got to worry about the player safety and health issues. On the get a deal side, Jesse Rogers, our Major League Baseball reporter, shocker, we're running out of time here.
It's pretty grim no matter what happens because the players feel like the calendar is shrinking on them due to the league dragging their feet in their estimation. And that means playing 60, 65, maybe 55 games. It's something they never wanted to do. Or even a lot of fans aren't going to be interested necessarily in the World Series winner of a 50 or 60 game season. So it's grim no matter what happens, but there's still some hope, but not a lot of optimism that it's going to be great baseball over the next few months, because usually it takes a couple months for teams to really find their groove. So I still think, I don't know, 50.5% chance that they'll play, but you never know. Again, this thing changes daily.
So in basketball, we're going to a state where there's a spike in the coronavirus. In baseball, they still can't work out a deal. And oh, by the way, every facility has closed down. And in the NFL, you have the union doctor telling players stop working out together on your own, which is what players do in the off season. Stop doing it until you're all together in camp where we can test everybody. And, oh, I guess is there slight good news? I guess this has to be slight good news, right, for Dallas Cowboy fans. Dak Prescott, for all intent and purposes, even if he doesn't have a long-term deal, is going to camp. I think everybody thought that anyway. The word is he's going to sign his franchise tag today, which is a little over $31 million, which does mean they have until July 15th to work out a long-term deal. If not, that's what he plays on. But it also means he has signed the contract, meaning he could still hold out if he wanted to. I don't know why he would. He wouldn't sign the deal if he was going to hold out. None of us thought he was going to hold out anyway. So you know you'll have Dak Prescott as your quarterback this year for the Cowboys.
Good, nice temporary win that you backed yourself into. I am so happy to see the Cowboys bad business on this one, finally backing them into a corner, because that's where they sit on this. Dak Prescott is going to make a bleep ton of money by his standards over the course of this season. And basically, short of winning the Super Bowl this year, the Cowboys now find themselves at a big time crossroads.
Listen, and the reason is because of what the cap may be next year and what they would have to pay him based on the language. Because if they don't get a long-term deal done, next year it's, what, 120% of last year's salary.
Next year he could his franchise tag would be over $37
million. $37 million. And we all expect for the first time in the salary cap era of the NFL for that cap to come down.
I think it's at, what, $192 million?
Almost $200
million. Almost $200 million, but a lot of people think because of what's going on and the revenue that they're not going to get, it is going to come down. But his number won't change.
No.
Because it's going to be set. It's correct. A percentage of what he's making this year. So it would be over 37 mil. So they got to get a deal done.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with whether or not with the revenue goes down next year, because it's based on what he made this, year,
made this year.
And it's
right.
120% of that.
Yeah.
So that's why now the Cowboys are backed. You said it, Junior. They have reverse engineered this thing almost to perfection. And not by plan. It just sort of happenstance. But now there's no getting around the fact that they've got to have a long-term contract with Dak.
Yep. Adam Schefter was on with SVP last night and talked about why Dak is actually sitting pretty on the tag.
The stakes on the poker game between the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott just got higher, because once he does sign that, then the Dallas Cowboys owe him the $31.4 million for this season. And if they can't get a long-term deal done by July 15th and they have to franchise him again, guess what that number is going to be? 37.7. And if they can't get a deal done after that, it's 144% of the salary from the previous year, $54.4 million. So to me, when Dak Prescott signs, yes, he gives up his options for this year. Yes, he has to be there. But to me, he's got long-term leverage, because the Dallas Cowboys can't afford to lose Dak Prescott, and they can't have him count against their cap at the numbers he's currently slated to make each of the next couple of years.
Golic and Wingo is brought to you by Shell. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear testing using SAE 5W30. I just wanted to hear Adam say those ridiculous numbers, but it's a show. Unless Dak Prescott really wants to be a Cowboy for life and long term, there is no incentive for him to sign anything before July 15th.
No, absolutely not. And the Cowboys have no chance. Listen, it's all sort of fallen their way, right? When they got CeeDee Lamb, and then they got the defender out of Alabama, Diggs, the safety of the cornerback in the second round when he's supposed to be a first round talent. It's all just sort of worked out. Well, now they got to work this part out.
Always go when you can use a name as a verb. He's just Kirk Cousined him.
Yes, exactly right. As Kirk told me on the schedule release show, I told Dak that the cap can be your friend. The tag can be your friend. Uh-huh. It's being very friendly right now. Coming up, and then there's college football, and the two teams that played in the national title game are handling the pandemic in very different ways. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, man. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
One, two, three, four.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Marcus, good morning, and it's always good to talk to you. It's unfortunate to talk to you about these circumstances, but what was your reaction when you heard about the incident at Talladega with the noose being found in Bubba's garage?
First of all, good morning, fellas. Man, listen, Trey, I'm at a point now where there's no, like, I sent out a tweet and said, man, if you're racist, just let everybody know so we know how to approach you. You know, we have a lot of situations going on. That's been going on. We've been having a lot of discussion, at ESPN, everywhere, like in social circles, talking to people opening their eyes. We're having good discussions in this country. And I'm just, I'm to the point now where I'm not going to get emotional about everything that's happening out there negatively. Obviously, it's horrible for an act like that to be done. But unfortunately, there are people still like that. There are circumstances that's going to cause people that are fighting for that way of life, that way of thinking, to do outlandish things. So, you know, I'm starting to edge towards putting my focus and my attention on people that are trying to do positive things. Obviously, NASCAR came out and made a strong statement about getting to the bottom of it. I watched my brother Marty Smith talk about it. So, like, that's where I am. I know whatever – it seems like whatever reaction you have, somebody's going to have a problem with it. You know, or – so for me, I'm done with the emotional roller coaster. I'm going to focus my time and energy on people that really want things to be better, that are not where they should be in this country, in sports, in life, period. I went to my grandfather's funeral this weekend. My wife's grandfather passed away, and I was around family, and we were having these discussions because they're going on all around the country. And a couple of my uncles and cousins and family members, we just got into a really good discussion over a grill, because I was grilling for everybody because they love to eat what I cook. But it was a great conversation, man, because it was a bunch of black men, women, children, having a discussion about moving forward and actually still understanding and recognize that we have a ways to go in this country, but also talking about the progress that's being seen and the eyes that are being opened. So you know, I kind of am going to honor that side of it, man. I'm gonna talk about the people that really want things to be better, and not focus on some idiot hanging a noose, knowing what that symbolizes, and just giving them the time of day. So I'm probably not gonna have a visceral reaction like some people will, or like most people will, and that's their right and prerogative to have that stance on it. But man, it's time to move forward. Racist people are getting left behind. And you guys know as well as anybody, when things are starting to crumble, that's when people put up their strongest fight. They try to make their strongest statement. And, you know, I feel like that's what we're seeing in this country now from the ones that hide and do these cowardly things. And the reason why we know they know it's wrong is because they always do it in the dark.
Yep. Absolutely well said and well put. Certainly sorry for your family's loss in there, Marcus, but a powerful message on being part of a positive solution going forward, which we all here know you will absolutely be a part of, and switching gears entirely as we try and maneuver back to the yeah. world of on-field sports that go on in all this. You're obviously well-known for being a former Cowboy in all this one, and we got the news over the weekend. Dak Prescott intends to sign his franchise tender, $31.5 million coming his way. Marcus, they've still got till July 15th to work out a long deal, but I'd ask you, at this point now, why would Dak sign a long-term deal going into this season?
I'm an analyst. I work for ESPN. I'm paid to know these things, and I have no idea. I have no damn idea why he would wait. I mean, sign this kid now. Oh, you know, I thought about it, and we know, we all know, we've been talking about this game for a long time. Maybe it's already been talked privately between Dak and the Cowboys that they will get a contract done. Maybe they're close. Like, for real this time, because people been telling us they close, folks. I feel like they've been telling us they close since I was playing for them. but with that being said, man, there are a lot of things that could be transpiring. We looking at possibly not having a football season or a limited football season, and Dak saying, if I don't sign, we might not even play games. So let me get $31 million instead of making whatever I was going, instead of not making anything. There could be the part which sometimes we usually see, is that a long-term deal is going to be agreed on. Both parties are there. Now they're just working out details. Or the third part is he might have morphed into the Kirk Cousins idea and said, I'm going to just do these tenders and then I'll find somewhere to go. But they're, like I said, it's so many angles. They signed Andy Dalton. Did that put pressure on that? Did they create a leverage play by signing Andy Dalton? Yes. I mean, for all intents and purposes, when we look at that situation, yes, they did. They created great leverage with a quarterback that could play. And then you look at the team and how it's constructed right now, the Cowboys should be pretty good. I know we say that every year, but they should be pretty good. So it just depends, man. Like, I want to believe that Dak signed this because the Cowboys and Dak's representatives are close to making a long-term deal, more along the terms of where he wants it and everybody is comfortable. But with that being said, the times that we're in, talking about this pandemic and COVID, that could be a play too. And I'm kind of going back to what I said. Or Andy Dalton could have scared the hell out of him and been like, man, I need to sign this contract or I'll be broke and not playing at all.
All right, Marcus, let's go to college now. We're seeing positive tests in a lot of places as not only football players but athletes come back for their summer workouts. Your former school, LSU, they're actually quarantining people who haven't tested positive because there was an outbreak of at least 100 cases in the bars near campus. So where is your worry meter on college football as they try and ramp up to their season?
Big Mike, I've been like super – there's going to be football. I guess now it feels like I've been in denial, but I always was holding that position. But I'm transitioning, man. Here's the thing that I'm afraid of, and I don't know if afraid is the right word, but I'm afraid. Shoot, if I was a player or a parent, we know that we knew that college football players would get COVID. We knew that pro football players would get COVID, right? So we heard Goodell and we heard college pro Ohio State sending parents to sign a waiver. And the thing is this, if we lose one kid to COVID-19 because we wanted to play a football season, one kid, I'm not talking about numbers of, well, this is the percentage of guys that possibly died from COVID-19. If we lose one kid, it was not worth it. And I know the statistics tell you young adults, young teens, they deal with this, they get over it. But we don't know who in these football programs, as far as players' immune systems are compromised. We don't know if there's a condition that could be magnified because a kid is in an environment where they got COVID. Or coronavirus running through a locker room or around. So I'm starting to have that type of pause because I'm thinking about obviously the worst possible scenario. And it doesn't look like this thing is going anywhere anytime soon. It looks like, you know, it'll be people will be testing positive for it, and you know whether they beat it and it's, you know, something that runs its course in a day, a week, or however long it takes, or you got the totally extreme other side of that, which the side that I'm focused on, because everything that we've talked about leading up to college football, leading up to pro football, all of the protocols, all of the, we're going to have 20% capacity of being able to work out. We're not going to bring all the staff back. If we lose one person, football player, and that's not to dismiss the fact that you can lose staff and people that's around the program either. But if we lose one football player, because that's what we're talking about right now, it was not worth it to try to play games. So I'm nervous now. Yeah. I'm nervous.
We're all nervous. Yep. We're all unsure because none of us really know what's going on here, and we're just trying to figure this thing out as it goes along. Marcus, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your perspective. And again, sorry for your loss, but thanks for being with us this morning, man.
All right, my brothers. I appreciate y'all, man.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. It's very interesting where that went.
Zach, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate it. We know there was that virtual town hall by the players last week, and Michelle Roberts of the NBAPA says she's not surprised, given what's going on in the state of Florida, that the cases are spiking. How concerned are players about the bubble they're about to enter into later on this month?
It's interesting because I think players are concerned about a lot of things entering the bubble, and truthfully, I think as recently as a week ago, catching the virus might have been third on their list of concerns behind isolation and leaving their families for a long period of time and leaving the Black Lives Matter protest movement to quarantine in Orlando. And now, as these numbers spike, and as you said, a lot of it is in South Florida, and I think the NBA would say, hey, you know, look at the geography. The South Florida numbers are not going to be relevant for us. But it is spiking in Central Florida, too, at least in relative terms. And now I think those numbers, it's not just players. Everyone in the league has taken notice and said, okay, how big of a deal is this? How powerful is our bubble? What are these Disney employees going to be doing when they're not on the campus? And all of a sudden, the virus has sort of crept more into the discussion here.
And Zach, I think that's an interesting point, is what are they going to do? We know so much of what the NBA and the Players Association were going forward with had already been agreed upon. It's still got to be ratified technically, but all signs point to yes on that. Do you think there would be any changes the NBA might make to its protocol as a result of some of these new numbers?
I think, you know, Michelle Roberts mentioned that to me in a statement saying, you know, if we grow concerned enough about third-party staffers, by which she meant essentially Disney staffers who are going to service the hotels and things like that, you know, we'll seek to implement them. But, you know, Disney staffers are unionized, and it's a powerful union. And I think if the NBA could have implemented those kind of regulations, whether it's those people live on campus, those people get tested regularly, whatever the NBA would like to do in an ideal world, I think that would have happened already. And so I don't exactly know what steps would be left to take. Now, the NBA has thought of everything from decks of cards getting thrown out to no doubles ping pong. So they're probably 10 steps ahead on this, thinking of creative ideas that I haven't thought of, but I'm just not sure what's actually feasible.
So with 22 teams, Zach, going down to Orlando at 37 personnel per, that's a little over 800 total. But as far as players, you're talking in the 300s of actual players. And we know if that date is still the correct date, you could tell me if I'm wrong, of tomorrow or June 24th. June 24th being the day they have to declare whether they're going to play or not. Are we getting any sense of an amount of players that may just say no to this and don't go to Orlando?
I'm not sure about an amount, but I would be surprised if we got through the next 48 hours and had zero players say they're not going. I would bet that there is going to be a decent, I'm not even going to guess the number, but I would be very surprised if every player went, and I do think some players will bow out, and that's their decision, and I think the league would be supportive of their decision. And I think from the league's perspective, this thing can go on as long as the key players on the four or five best teams all go. And if any of those guys start to bow out, or as Golic, you know, hinted at earlier, if they start testing positive when this thing starts, that's when you get to the point of, is this really worth doing? Or is this sort of a quote unquote real NBA playoffs at this point?
Zach Lowe with us. And Zach, I think that's the point, right? It's not the number of players, it's which players. Because it can be a very small number of players, but if whether you can say whether that's right or wrong or fair or wrong, it just is. If it's the important players, that changes the dynamic completely, right?
Well, and it's interesting, is the definition of important, I think different people have different definitions of it. So at first you obviously think the stars of the four or five best teams. And then you start to talk to people around the league and I say, you know, to win a championship, you need everybody. I mean, there's going to be a game where your 11th guy swings a game. There's going to be a game where your 12th guy swings the fourth quarter. So it's easy to just sort of gloss over, oh yeah, the Lakers can thrive without Dwight Howard and Avery Bradley. You know, those are a fifth starter and a reserve center, but you start chipping away at their depth and you look at how teams get through four playoff rounds. At some point, you need almost everybody in your rotation to have a big game and a big moment. So I think the role players on the best teams also kind of qualify as quote unquote the important guys that can swing the championship.
Zach, to that end, and we've had this discussion about almost every league and everything getting ready to start back up, is what the tipping point looks like. You mentioned needing everybody and the prospect of, you know, a rash of positive tests. Have we heard any inkling of, if there are X amount of positive tests on a team, that team is going to have to shut down or be sidelined for whatever the time being is?
Nope, and I think that was the most interesting piece of news from the 113-page health protocol they released last week, was the non-news of that wasn't in there. They just had one line of about a small number of tests will not shut this thing down, essentially. And that they obviously did not want to codify any specifics of, you know, if seven players on one team get it, we have to shut it down. I keep telling people to look at the calendar. Right now, Game 7 of the finals is, I think, October 13th. The beginning of next season is a little bit vague. Initially, it was pitched as December 1st. Let's say it's December 10th or 15th. That's already a really, really short offseason. Now, in theory, they can push next season back a little bit, but then you start to run into the Olympics if those happen, and the NBA doesn't want to do that. So that little tiny short offseason does not give you really any wiggle room at all to say, okay, seven players in the conference finals have it. Let's hit pause for 2 weeks until this thing clears out. So I'm not really sure that they have a good answer for that scenario, to be honest with you.
Yeah, listen, that's the fairest thing. I'm not sure is the fairest thing anyone can say about any of this, because it is all projected and dependent on, well, if this happens or if this doesn't happen. At this point, the bubble scenario is headed forward, and we'll see what the players' response to be. Again, they have to decide whether or not they're going to go this week. Zach, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you.
Much appreciated, guys. Have fun.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Marty, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your time. The race is scheduled to go off today, again, at 3 o'clock at Talladega. NASCAR has already put out a strong statement supporting Bubba Wallace, condoning, obviously, the hideous act of what they found in his locker. What do you expect them to do when the race begins at 3 o'clock today to show the support that they should all be throwing behind Bubba right now?
I don't really know that, Trey. Good morning, guys. I imagine there'll probably be a statement, but I've not talked to NASCAR about this, so this is just my opinion. Based on what they did at Atlanta a couple weeks back, based on how quickly they responded to Bubba Wallace's plea to eradicate and ban the Confederate flag from the sports garage, from its culture, and from its future, I expect there will probably be some sort of statement made by President Steve Phelps, as we saw at Atlanta. This is very difficult to process that this could happen. And that's me talking. I'm a 44-year-old white man. And I said last night on Scott's show, and I heard you guys play a rejoin there of it, how frustrating this is and how saddening this is and how shocked I was by it and some of the feedback that I received. And I don't read a lot of feedback, but some of the feedback I received is from African-American folks is that I shouldn't be shocked. And it's just very disheartening to me it's very disheartening to me because I love this sport, and I know that the overwhelming majority and percentage of people in it have great appreciation for everyone. And what I keep going back to is I just hate this so terribly for Daryl, for Bubba. And it does do my heart good to see how many people immediately come to his defense and build him up. And he has taken on a lot. And for someone to do this despicable act, it's disgusting. And I just it frustrates me that this is going to give ammunition to anybody who called BS or continues to call BS on the sport trying to do better and be better and more inclusive in every way. It just gives them that ability to go, I told you so. And NASCAR has said, they said it last night, they told me last night that when this came to their attention by one of Daryl's, a member of the number 43 team, brought it to NASCAR's attention, and they immediately had a senior executive meeting with Steve Phelps, the president, and Steve O'Donnell, the executive vice president, and several other people at that level of the company. And they made the decision that they would put out this statement and that they would make it known that whomever this is, they're going to have the ability to come find you and kick your ass out of the sport. And, you know, I know that one of you guys is probably going to ask about surveillance cameras and what that might look like in the Talladega garage area. It's a brand new garage area. They just did a massive renovation. I don't know, because I haven't been inside the racetrack, where he was parked. I don't know that answer. I haven't seen it. I haven't been told, even though I've asked. So, but because it's a brand new area, you would think that there is substantial surveillance and that they probably have some sort of video footage of who that might be, or maybe someone will come forward and say who it is so that justice can happen here.
Did we?
Oh, I don't know if we lost
Marty.
Marty,
we lose you? Got you there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you guys lose me?
Yeah, we lost you.
No, sorry. We thought it dropped out there for a second, Marty. Understandably, an emotional conversation for all the reasons that you mentioned, for your passion for the sport and for everything around it. And Marty, is that almost what makes it maybe not harder to process in this situation, but maybe sting even more, is that, and I heard your co-host Ryan McGee talking about that, you know, fans weren't allowed access to this area.
They aren't.
Happened under normal circumstances. And so this had to be someone either, you know, in that area that was allowed to be there, which is almost maybe more jarring.
Here's kind of the situation, Junior, with the COVID-19 protocol. The garage area is working at about one third its normal workforce, and the teams are spread out a bit further than they typically would be. And fans just got allowed back into the racetrack yesterday, into the grandstands. And none of those fans, I talked to the racetrack officials last night before the news came out about what happened in Bubba's garage stall. And the track was so thrilled because all of the paying fans that came into the facility, they adhered to what NASCAR told them to do. None of them tried, at least the track told me this, that none of them tried to sneak in any flags or wear anything egregious or anything like that. Now, we did have the guy who decided to get in a crop duster and fly over the top of the racetrack with the flag saying defund NASCAR. And I think, you know, this is restricted airspace, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens there as well. But fans are not allowed in the garage. And without COVID, they're everywhere. I mean, everywhere. It's swarming. That's one of the beautiful parts of the sport, is the access. And that didn't apply this time. And so I can't say unequivocally that you can completely remove that it was a fan from this equation, but I can go way up on the percentage scale. So you'd have to believe those that are allowed. Like, guys, I've covered every NASCAR race since the sport came back except two, and I haven't been inside a racetrack yet. So
So they are. It is really, really selective who is allowed to work in there. You have team members, and the drivers don't even go to the garage. Guys, they walk from their motorhomes to their cars to drive them, to race them. So you have team members, you have officials, you have security staff, you have cleaning staff that have access. So I would imagine that right now NASCAR is feverishly looking through every angle that they have and probably interviewing people on the team about what they saw. Because, you know, to McGee's point, just based on math, you would have to believe that it was a member of the industry or someone that had that kind of access. And golly, like, it's just not damn not acceptable. It's just not. It's just bad. Be a human being, man.
Oh,
being. Let's care for each other. Let's try very hard to be kind and let kindness be our compass in this life. And there are so many people out there who are so mad and angry. And it's just I struggle with the division.
So, Marty, as we're talking to Marty Smith from Marty McGee, as we spin this thing forward, and we don't know where NASCAR will go, but if it's a certain situation, and I'll give it to you in a second, but we saw the NBA not go to Charlotte for an All-Star game because of what was called the bathroom bill. We're seeing the SEC saying, hey, we may not let a championship game go to Mississippi until you get the Confederate, part of the Confederate flag out of your state flag. What if this turns out to be a local person who works Talladega, not someone from one of the teams, but a person that works Talladega? Is there any way NASCAR punishes Talladega for this? I mean, no. I'm just trying to think forward of where this may go.
No. I think it's just now this is provided that it's a one person that decided to do this.
Right.
You know, if this is like a whole group of people, that's maybe a different conversation. But if it's one person that made the decision to do this, no matter for whom they work, doesn't matter. Whether it's the racetrack, whatever it is, they're going to be gone. And I don't know what sort of legal ramifications are involved in this. I don't have any idea there. But no, in terms of not coming to race here, no, I don't think that you can't. The way I see it, you can't blanket. Now, the thing about coming here to Talladega is, you know, there, as Bubba said a couple of weeks back about any sort of racial undertones that the sport has had in the past and how hard everybody's worked to try very hard to be progressive and move past that. And what's frustrating is that this just sets that back some. But just because one person does it doesn't mean we can blanket that everybody feels that way. And that's universal, no matter what we're talking about.
Yeah. Listen, I'm very curious to see what happens today when the race begins at 3:00, what the show of support will be and what statement will come out, because they have another opportunity, and NASCAR has been great on this, to opportunity to say, no, this is not what we're about and this is what we stand for. And we'll see exactly what plays out today when that race resumes or begins at 3:00 today. Marty, as always, we appreciate the time, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks, Marty.
Thank you, guys. Be well.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.